The Lord be with you.
And with
your spirit. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Mark.
Glory to you, Lord.
The disciples of John and of the Pharisees were accustomed to fast. People came to Jesus and objected, "Why do the disciples of John and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" Jesus answered them, "Can the wedding guests fast while the bridegroom is with them? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. But the days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and then they will fast on that day. No one sews a piece of unshrunken cloth on an old cloak. If he does, its fullness pulls away, the new from the old, and the tear gets worse. Likewise, no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and both the wine and the skins are ruined. Rather, new wine is poured into fresh wineskins." The Gospel of the Lord. It is uncommon that we do this, but can we take a look at the first reading? And if you have your Magnificat, if you have the readings there before you, it would be most helpful. For 1900 years, when this letter was read, everyone attending Mass would have heard a reading from the letter of St. Paul to the Hebrews. Now we just say a reading from the letter to the Hebrews. We remove St. Paul because certain modern biblical scholars say, gosh, did he really write it or not? How can we know? Why for 1900 years did it say from St. Paul? Because that's what we always believed. But what's the argument that it's not from St. Paul? People say, well, gosh, you look at his letter to the Romans or to the Corinthians or the Galatians, and it's so different from this one that those letters are simpler. The language is so theological, so deep and profound. Why would the language in this one be different than all the other letters? Because who was it written to? The Hebrews. Those who would understand the mysteries of God already, and so could be instructed on a deeper level. We're going to take the tiniest little look at this letter, even just two lines of it. So it's considered the most theological, or one of the most theological writings in the New Testament, perhaps after the Gospel of St. John. So beautiful of our Lord, he offered prayers and supplications with loud cries and tears. You know, to picture our Lord praying for the world, praying for us in tears. But it's the very last line that I want to focus on. It says, he learned obedience from what he suffered. Now, did not our Lord already know everything? How could Christ, who has all knowledge, have learned something? Because from all eternity, with God the Father, they share one sole will. Our Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of God, would have never had to practice obedience to the Father. But when he took flesh, when he became man, he also took a human nature, which had its own will. And so therefore, our Lord would have had to exercise the virtue of obedience. Obedience to the divine will of the Father. And we see this above all when he goes to the Passion, in the agony in the garden, when he says, Lord, let this cup pass from me. Not my will, but yours be done. Learning obedience, how? From what he suffered. And my brothers and sisters, it's the same with every single one of us. When do we exercise obedience to the Father above all else? When is it most difficult? In times of suffering. And this is where we learn that obedience and love go hand in hand. Why was our Lord Jesus Christ obedient to the Father? Because he loved him. When do we exercise obedience most fully? In the midst of suffering, and therefore it has to manifest an ever greater love. And then the last part of that line. And when he was made perfect, He became the source of eternal salvation for all who believe, who obey him. When he was made perfect, did our Lord lack any perfection? Was he not already one with God? And didn't he take a perfect human nature? So how can the author, if it's St. Paul, to the letter to the Hebrews, say that when he was made perfect? This language was language from the Old Testament that was used in the language for sacrifice. When the Hebrews would offer sacrifice to the Father, they say they would make it perfect. They would consecrate the sacrifice. They would set it aside so that it was worthy of the Father. And when they would set something aside, they would consider that sacrifice to have been made holy and therefore ready to be used for worship. And so it says when Christ was made perfect, when he was consecrated, when he was set aside as a sacrifice to the Father, when was our Lord, in a sense, made perfect? In the Last Supper, he says to the disciples, if you read the Gospel of John, he says in his prayer to the Father, Father, I consecrate myself so that they can be consecrated. I set myself aside as a sacrifice. We can look at two moments. His sacrifice on the cross. And in the moment of the Last Supper. I consecrate myself so that they can be consecrated. I set myself aside so that all my followers will have the strength to set themselves aside as a sacrifice. At the Last Supper, we would say it was the first consecration. Why do we use that term in every Mass? We consecrate the bread and the wine. We set them aside as a sacrifice. Our Lord consecrates himself anew to offer himself to the Father so that all of us can be consecrated. So that then we will have the grace and the strength to offer our lives also in sacrifice to the Father. In imitation of our Lord. I close with this. We celebrate the feast of St. Agnes. When she was a little girl, she made a vow. She consecrated herself that she would live a life of virginity to give herself only to our Lord. When young suitors wanted to marry her, this became known. And because she was a Christian, she was breaking the law. So they brought her before the authorities. They laid instruments of torture before her, thinking surely she would let go of her vow. When they saw that she wouldn't, they threatened to give her to a house of prostitution. She answered, Jesus Christ is too jealous of the purity of his chosen ones to let them be violated in such a manner. You may stain your sword with my blood, but you will never be able to profane my body consecrated to Christ. May we also consecrate ourselves to Christ. There is no greater means to remain faithful to him than through an act of total consecration. And I recommend above all through the hands of Our Lady. And then that consecration is strengthened. We're able to fulfill it every day by receiving his consecrated body.